This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. The Reuters Institute recently released its annual digital news report last month. So for reflections on the state of news media, both globally and in Malaysia, over the past year, today we're speaking to Zaharum Nain, Professor of Media and Communication Studies at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Professor Zaharum, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, Shazana.
Now, you've been carrying out this international digital news survey for the Reuters Institute since 2016, 2017. So maybe we can go behind the scenes a little bit and just get a glimpse of how this annual survey is conducted. Can you briefly walk me through what that process is like?
Yeah, firstly, I don't conduct the surveys, actually. I help with designing the questionnaire, improving on it. I help with the translation and stuff like that. The survey itself is conducted by YouGov. YouGov is an international research data and analytics group based in London. Mm-hmm. It is one of the world's largest research networks, and they do largely market research. Yeah, those of us who are the country experts, as it were, we help with choosing the brands, with language translation, and determining the questions asked. We work together with a team at Reuters, at Oxford. We work together with them. Every new year, they pick up new themes. And for example, this year, they also looked at the changing news habits and attitudes of younger audiences. Yeah, they look at 12 countries. Malaysia wasn't one of them. But if you look at the findings there, I think you can figure out that it's quite similar in the context of Malaysia, although we need to do that kind of research. Yeah, where the young now tend to go to, you know, what they call site door sort of news sources, like aggregated sites, like social media and so on and so forth. So these are important issues for the producers of news, as it were.
Before we zoom into the Malaysia-specific findings, yeah. I'd like to take a broad look at the report and what some of the key highlights are. What are the main trends identified over the past year in terms of news media around the world that specifically stood out to you?
It's a trend that's been around for a couple of years now, and I think it's a depressing trend in that the old media of the press is facing a lot of problems. And I think none of us are too happy with that. Even if the press is, in many countries, are controlled, nonetheless, I think the more media there are, the better. Mm. But this particular platform, newspapers, is one that's facing problems throughout the world. Many of them have gone online. But even online portals have their own problems to resolve. As far as business models are concerned, for example. Mm. Yeah. So that's one. Mm. The other one is, of course, the pandemic, how the pandemic has affected news gathering, for example. Yeah. Access to news sources by reporters, by journalists, and so on and so forth. And the pandemic has been used as an excuse by a lot of countries, as it were, a lot of governments to increasingly control the media, right? I mean, we saw in the context of Malaysia, we saw the emergency being declared and various rules and regulations were set up. And subsequently, that prevented access to and the wider and more in-depth reporting of what the pandemic was all about. The problem with that was, you know, previously, many, many years ago, before digital media, perhaps they could have got away with it. But with digital media, many people just went on to social media then. You know, I mean, what I found and what was in my report was that, for example, like alternative medicines, for example, which were discredited by the government, like ivermectin, became the big news among social media, and which meant that the authorities had to come in to provide explanations as to why ivermectin, for example, was problematic in that kind of sense. Yeah. So digitalization of the media has provided more platforms, which is a good and bad thing. It's a double-edged sword, right? But in the context of the pandemic, it allowed alternative explanations to come about. It forced the authorities to come up with their own explanations in order to make sure that the medical health programs succeeded in the context of Malaysia.
One of the points that came out in the report, Prof, that I thought was interesting, was in terms of the number of respondents who were said to actively be avoiding news, in the sense that news consumption actually decreased. I mean, is this a trend that you see mirrored in Malaysia? Are people here perhaps not consuming news as much?
I don't think they're not consuming as such. As the study of the 12 countries shows among the young, it's not about not consuming news, but it's about consuming news site from what you call site door, as it were, meaning aggregator sites, meaning news that that's been cut and pasted onto WhatsApp, for example, that kind of stuff, sometimes without any source being given there, right? News is still there. It's essentially how it's put across to the people. I think people... Although we need to do more studies on that. In the context of Malaysia, because audiences prefer free news, right? Then they don't wish to subscribe, right? So subsequently, they look for the easiest way possible. And that is through social media, where social media, people cut and paste things from online media onto social media. So I don't think news consumption as such has decreased as much as news consumption from specific sources, news sources, those have decreased possibly. People still look for news. The problem is when they surf for news, as it were, in this manner, many members of the audience, unfortunately, are not internet savvy, are not media savvy. So that's where fake news becomes prevalent, and becomes, are just spread over the social media. There is a need to educate people. I mean, I think one of the questions that was raised was about restrictions on news. How can you counter misinformation and disinformation? And often, unfortunately, the authorities tend to clamp down using laws and using legal instruments. That's not going to work over a long period of time. And, as more new sources or alternative sources appear, as social media spreads and you can't control social media as such over a long period or sustained period of time, invariably, that kind of control is not going to work. People need to be educated. They don't need to be told what to read and what to believe in. They need to essentially be educated on how to essentially access and utilize what's there in the different platforms.
I'm wondering, Prof, how well do you think our government policies are achieving that aim, I suppose, of educating the public on media literacy, right? And I'm wondering how this differs from, say, the older generation that didn't grow up with digital media and the younger generation that have had digital media all their lives, whether you see a distinction in the way these two groups interpret or consume news media.
Certainly there is a difference. In the old days, you had television, you had newspapers. You didn't have access to the international news agencies unless they were essentially filtered by our agencies like Bernama, right? You didn't have access to those kind of things. Later on, you had direct broadcasts, you had access in that kind of sense. But with digitalization now, despite all the controls that are there, you have access. You can, there are ways and means to go around, using VPN and so on and so forth. You have ways of going around the controls. And a lot of things are not controlled. And access to, BBC World Service, CNN, Al Jazeera and all that, which wasn't there in the old days. Access are much more possible now, with the internet, with digitalization. So it's a totally different ball game, a totally different environment now. Before, you could censor, you could close, you could, it's newspapers and television, right? And once you control television, once you control the newspapers through ownership, through the various legal instruments, virtually, people, unless they left the country, had no way of knowing of getting access to alternative accounts or what's happening in your country. But now, with the digitalization, You can access it from your computers, from your phone, you know, as long as you have internet access. Of course, you can say we can control internet access, but to what extent? To, you know, that affects in it affects business. Yeah, when you're part of the global market, as it were, governments need to be more open. Mm. So that's the difference now. There's multiple platforms. Like I'm saying, they're not necessarily varied, but there are many of them now, and their access to those kind of platforms. Mm. So any kind of control that the government might want to put, or governments want to put on information, becomes problematic. And I think that's a good thing, because if you have a benign government, that's fine. But more often than not, we don't have benign governments. Yeah, we have governments who want to control the people around the world, not necessarily just here, but around the world. And therefore, it's good to have that kind of escape, as it were, this kind of pathway that navigates around those kind of controls.
I'm speaking to Professor Zaharom Nain, Professor of Media and Communication Studies at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, on the latest Reuters Institute Digital News Media Report. We'll have more after the break. BFM 89.9. Thanks for staying tuned to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar, and today I'm speaking to Zaharom Nain, Professor of Media and Communication Studies at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. We're discussing the findings of the latest Reuters Institute Digital News Media Report that was released last month. Another interesting data point in the Malaysian survey was the perception of undue influence, namely whether the public viewed the news media as independent or otherwise, yeah? And, I mean, broadly, the percentages are still low. 20% see the media as independent from political influence, and 23% see the media as independent from business or commercial interest. But both of these figures were an increase from 2017. So I'm wondering if you think we can draw any conclusions or hypotheses from this.
One, I think what we have to look at it as an ongoing trend, as it were. We have to look at it in terms of not years, but in terms of combination of years. Yeah, and if you're looking in terms of interference and trust and so on and so forth, it doesn't happen overnight, the loss of trust. Yeah, and if you look at the history of Malaysian media, the interference of politicians, interference by the political parties, the government, and so on and so forth. This goes back a long, long way. I mean, if you want to go back, you might say 1961 with the taking over of Utusan Melayu by UMNO, the Utusan strike at that point in time, that saw for the very first time a Malaysian political party wanting to take over a media, right? And then you see this happening over a period of time. You see a reformasi, you see the way the media depicted reformasi, depicted particular characters at that point in time, and how disgusted the Malaysian public was at that point in time. And therefore, fortunately or unfortunately, digitalization had begun then, and therefore alternative accounts came up, you know, the blogs came up and so on and so forth at that point in time. So one sees alternatives coming up on the one hand, economic problems on the other hand, faced by mainstream newspapers that for a long time had dominated the market. One saw then also political parties going into the media. Yeah, so it's taken, you know, about 60 years now for that kind of lack of trust in the media to have taken place. Previously, I guess perhaps there was no alternative. But with digitalization, suddenly people find, hey, we can communicate well with each other. We can spread our own sort of accounts of things. Yeah, we can get alternative accounts. So it's becoming a little bit more messy for those who want to control the media, as it were. And for me, it's a good thing. Of course, the problem is, again, what kind of audience do we have? And I think we need a more media savvy, a more educated media audience than we have at the present moment. Mm. Yeah.
Post GE14, there seemed to be greater awareness about the risks of political parties controlling news media narratives. But I'm wondering if you think that we're seeing a reversal of that post the Sheraton move. Are we going back to old bad habits?
There have been, and there will always be continuing attempts. There will always be attempts by those in control to want to control the minds of the people as well. And the media provide one of those kind of platforms for exchanging ideas or restricting ideas, as it were, right? And when you have an internet penetration rate of about 88%, 90% now in the context of Malaysia, where control over the internet is there, but they're finding it increasingly difficult to, because people navigate around those controls. People learn to navigate around those controls. When these kind of things happen, they will want to gain greater control. With the greater commercialization, for example, online news, much of it is tends to be commercialized, tends to be or market-based, you know, whether it's Malaysia Kini or Free Malaysia Today or TMI, you know, or even BFM, right? One sees that there's less state involvement, as it were, unless it's through their proxies, which is what I'm going to coming to. There's less state involvement, there's greater participation by people within the market, as it were. So that competition often is seen between people who want to maximize their profits, as it were, in the kind of neoliberal economy that we have now. Now, those in control also want to control the economy, right? They want to control the information, they want to control the economy. So what we've seen over the past couple of years, what I think many of us have seen, done perhaps surreptitiously, it's not widely, widely declared and so on and so forth, is that the dominant media groups linked to dominant political parties have been moving into the online media market, as it were, trying to, sometimes succeeding, but I won't mention any names, controlling new media, news media outfits. Yeah, that last year I wrote was... in last year's report, I said this was typical of them trying to gain control because the GE15 was on the cards. And I think, as I see with this year, as GE15 draws nearer, more and more of those kind of maneuvers are taking place, yeah? Mm-hmm. Trying to control the main online newspapers and news portals that are there. It's a pattern that will continue irrespective of the media, right? As long as they feel something is popular and therefore you need to move into it. I mean, we saw it in I think GE, not 13, GE 12, when Abdullah Ahmad Badawi lost the internet war, and he actually said that after the election, saying he lost the internet war. Ever since then, I mean, before then, it was the opposition using the internet a lot, Lim Kit Siang with his blogs and so on and so forth. But after that, suddenly, you know, it became evident to those in power that they needed to win the internet war, as it were. Cyber troopers came on board, paid cyber troopers, professional groups coming into the picture, full-time cyber troopers at that point in time. And that has been the trend since, yeah? The new media, will be used. And one sees it in terms of ownership and control, one sees it in terms of cyber troopers and so on and so forth. They will be there when the next election comes about.
Right. So the digital space will become increasingly contested as we approach GE15. One final question I'm going to ask you to put on your, just look into your crystal ball, As you said, we're coming towards GE15. It's looming over us. So what are the trends that you're going to be watching when it comes to this media space, I suppose, if there are any broad points that you think we should keep an eye on as the general election draws closer?
I think the battle now will be on two fronts. One would be news media, online news media, digital news media, I wouldn't say just online news media, digital news media, television as well coming into the picture. Two would be social media, TikTok. TikTok is beginning to be utilized in various ways by political groups, yeah. Mm. Because one could cynically say that our attention span is so short now that it's TikTok that provides us that kind of information. Be that as it may, nonetheless, it is going to be, I feel, that social media is going to be the arena within which The next elections, battles will be fought. Yeah. Certainly the news media, certainly digital news media. I don't think years ago people would say people in the countryside, people in the kampongs read the newspapers, watched TV3, read Utusan Malaysia. I don't think that's totally true now. Mm. Yeah, people now open up their phones. Yeah, and access through their phones. It's not even computers now. You know, yes, it's still there, computers and so on and so forth. But with mobile phones, you know, having spread around the country and access the apps that are there on mobile phones that allow you to access social media. Certainly, I think that's going to be what. The political parties will be looking at. Yeah.
All right. And we saw like a snippet of how that played out in the state elections.
Yes.
What GE15 brings is going to be, I guess, the big question that we'll be looking at. Prof Zaharom, thanks very much for speaking with me. And we look forward to catching up with you as these events unfold.
Thank you, Shazana. It's been my pleasure. Thanks.
I've been speaking to Zaharom Nain, Professor of Media and Communication Studies at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, and then it's over to Enterprise. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.